Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Two games at Old Trafford, many very familiar signs and more goals aplenty. Erik ten Hag's Manchester United future remains uncertain at best. If this is his audition for the future, there are plenty left unconvinced. A 4-2 win against Sheffield United with the proud highlight of a 250th Academy graduate in Ethan Wheatley's debut, but then a disappointing 1-1 draw with Burnley. Boos at Old Trafford. Also on the Manchester United Woody podcast this week, we play Guess the Player, chat about the Academy after the under-18s completed a fantastic double with cup glory added to the league title and Ethan Wheatley's debut. We'll preview next Monday's game against Crystal Palace, and in our patron-only Q&A, we'll talk plenty more as well. Let's begin. I'm Harry Robinson. Jack Tate is with me as always. And Jack, United have failed to win 5 of the last 6 Premier League games, which is a unflattering statistic for any United and any United manager.
Unflattering in terms of the outcome, but to be honest, I think exactly correct based on the performance levels that we've seen. I think at times, especially draws can be used to, let's say, make stats say whatever you want them to, because you can either be on an unbeaten run a not winning run. But I think in this case, not winning 5 of our last 6 is a pretty good encapsulation of where this United team is. You know, the last week against Sheffield United and Burnley highlighted that perfectly. You managed to eventually get past Sheffield United fairly comfortably in the end, but after 80 minutes of letting a really very poor team have far too much of the ball, see far too much joy in the game and put ourselves in a hole that eventually we did manage to dig ourselves out of. It was much the same against Burnley. I did think the first 20 minutes or so were pretty good against Burnley, and then we really took our foot off the pedal, allowed them back into the game massively, and throughout the second half it was just yet another game of tennis effectively being played out at Old Trafford as United, for whatever reason, seemed completely unable to assert the better quality that we have on the pitch and let it show.
Yeah. When would you say is the last time we learned something particularly notable or new from a game?
It's a long time ago, to be honest.
I think what we have learned over the last month or two is that it's kind of confirmed that this isn't an issue of effort, and that maybe there's a couple of percent missing from certain players. That's always really hard to tell, is it? Are they playing at, 98 or 100%, whatever? But it's not like previous managers where there's a clear evidence of him having lost the dressing room, which is, I think, what makes it all the more frustrating at the moment. But yeah, that we learn so little each game because we're seeing such familiar patterns and, such familiar mistakes. I mean, look at this game where United have a few chances to score, but fairly uninspiring, a bit of control, and then kind of throw it away with an Andre Onana mistake. It's similar to the first day of the season.
Yeah,
and in that case, we came out unscathed from that one because we kind of got away with one. But not the case this time.
I mean, without picking out a specific game, I would say the last time where I feel like we really learned anything about United was probably just after the turn of the year when Hoyland, Rashford and Garnacho started being played as our regular front three when Antony was dropped. I felt like that did signal a change in United, and we did start to see over the course of 3 or 4 games that trio really develop and play really well, and that was around the time we started scoring goals as well. But ever since, it's also been paired up with this complete inability to have any control over a game for more than 5 or 10 minutes at a time. And I think you're right, this, you can go back to the first day, this wasn't particularly any different to that at all, to be honest. We had a couple of decent spells, but let a team who, are fairly good, and Burnley compared to Sheffield United definitely can move the ball pretty well at times. But again, the quality that we have on the pitch should be more than enough to get us past them. And it wasn't just as it was against Wolves as well. This wasn't as if it was just one thing right at the end of the game and Onana makes a mistake that lets Burnley in after being completely dominated for 90 minutes. It was the same against Wolves on the opening day. In both cases, this was a game where United really rode our luck to not have conceded before then. And against Wolves, we got the rub of the green with VAR making a mistake and not giving Wolves the penalty. And in this case, VAR didn't make the same mistake again, and we were punished. And on our side, it also took a horrendous mistake from Burnley for us to manage to put the ball in the net in the first place anyway.
Yeah, so familiar. Lots of shots. In this case, actually not many goals because the finishing on both sides was lacking a bit. And I think that is one of the, perhaps one of the underspoken about issues with this United team. And I think because actually in most other games, we have been scoring two or more in almost every game and goal scoring hasn't been the issue. But even in those games, such is the nature of our style of play at the moment that we've had plenty of chances to score well over two goals per game. But players like Garnacho and Antony's finishing hasn't been at quite the level required to make this style that Ten Hag wants to play in effective enough or ruthless enough. And so you see plenty of times, and I maintain this, that when Garnacho has too long to think about his finishes, he doesn't quite yet have the composure in his finishing and the decision making to make those go in every time. And when he does, he'll really step up a level, even though he's already a fantastic player and huge potential, obviously. But it reminds me a little of Rashford before. He got some extra kind of, it seems like he got some extra coaching from Solskjaer in that sense and became a lot more composed in front of goal. Obviously, we haven't seen it this season. And that's one of the things with Rashford is when you can kind of tell when he's on, he's going to finish or not, because it comes down to whether he places or whether he goes for power every time. And at the moment, we keep seeing him just go for power and power because he's obviously frustrated in his own game. Garnacho's a little different. I just think when his confidence, his decisiveness in his decision making isn't quite there, and so sometimes you see him miss chances. Antony, we know he gets the goal in the end, but as you say, requires a mistake. And this is the thing, this could have been a great week for Bruno Fernandes, who scores one penalty and one fantastic proper captain's goal, a weak foot from long range when United needed it most. And the reception he was getting before he'd scored either goal at Old Trafford against Sheffield United, I think because of that awareness that he was playing through injury. And he's a ridiculous man, isn't he? Playing with a broken wrist. He's not everything you want a United captain to be, but he's got a lot of it. And I think there was that warm reception for him against Sheffield United. And then again, creates loads of chances against Burnley. But because his teammates aren't finishing at the level really required, it's another week of kind of achievements for Bruno without it translating to the team, which is really the story of his United career.
Yeah, 100%. He was absolutely talismanic against Sheffield United, really dragged us through that game when, to be honest, the rest of the team don't know if we really deserve to be dragged through that game. And that's something he's done throughout his time at United. He's leading the Premier League, not for the first time, in chances created all season. I think he created over 9 chances in both the Burnley and Sheffield United games. You know, he's, like you said, he has his issues as United captain. And I think there is a completely fair debate to be had about how successful United can ever be with him as sort of the defining piece of our team. But you've also got to say that given the turmoil that this team has been in on the football pitch for the last 5 or 6 years, it is really quite scary to think where we might be without him at the club. Because
yeah, he's the new David De Gea in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And unlike De Gea, all that Fernandes deserves is to have a crowning moment. For De Gea, it was at the beginning of his career winning a Premier League, and you just hope that Fernandes gets a chance to have a moment like that in a United shirt too. He's obviously won some trophies at the club, but nothing like what he should have, given how far ahead of any other performer he has been for his entire time at the club.
Yeah, absolutely. Given we're saying there's very, very few new lessons to take away, we can come on to some positives shortly, because 250th Academy graduate really is something to celebrate. I guess Andre Onana's worth talking about. This is someone who'd really begun to feel like one of the pieces of the puzzle that you could trust at United, and his performance in the FA Cup semi-final penalty shootout was impressive, and it reminded me of how I felt about him at the start of the season when I remember being at Spurs away back in August, and he just seemed to be on a different kind of wavelength to the rest of the team in his game management and his understanding of when to go long and when to go short and when to waste a bit of time, and his time wasting throughout the season. And yeah, the kind of dark arts he's been very good at, no surprise, coming from Inter Milan and from Serie A. And then you had a few weeks of a series of pretty good performances helping United to win that shootout. But then this week, again, some more fantastic saves in both games, but once more a mistake in each. And he gifts Sheffield United a goal. He then gifts Burnley a penalty. And I'm confident that he is going to be a good goalkeeper for United long term. And I think it's always, you do see top goalkeepers make mistakes like the one he did against Sheffield United. It's something you do see Edison and Alisson do, probably Alisson a little bit more than Edison, who's perhaps slightly a level above. I don't know what people thinking. Well, certainly with his feet, he's probably a level above. But it is concerning. And it kind of seems the nature with all of these things. When Ten Hag really needs people to step up, and sometimes he finally gets one thing working, for example, Antony finally scoring a goal, and then it's another one of his signings who then makes a mistake to bring him back down to the kind of mediocrity that United really deserve at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about Onana. I think the Sheffield United one is, I think, a mistake that a lot of goalkeepers can make from time to time. It's one of those, as a player, when you watch it back, it's a mistake that I think is very easy for anyone, not just a goalkeeper, to make. Because when he looks up, Jordan Bogle isn't anywhere near Dalot, really, when he looks up to make that pass. And it's as he then sort of looks down to actually make the pass, and in the moment, in the time that it takes him to get to release the ball, Bogle was, you know, made up 5 or 10 yards of ground and is already sprinting and will inevitably cut out that pass. But I think anyone who's played football can sort of see that when you do have a player running from what is a long way back, you look at when Onana picks that ball up and gets his head up to look at Dalot, Jordan Bogle isn't anywhere near at that point. So I understand how that mistake can happen. Now, look, you could say at this level, you've got to have more awareness and understand that, which is a fair enough counterpoint. But I'm not so concerned with that one. I think the second one is, I mean, it was a series of mistakes. I think Casemiro's role in this is going a little bit under the radar and unpunished to some degree. Because the idea, firstly, of trying to put that header up to Onana, given that there was a couple of Burnley players between him and the goalkeeper, even if he pulls it off well, is a ridiculous thing to even try. And then the execution was even worse. Onana then panics, which he absolutely shouldn't. I mean, he was never getting anywhere close to that ball. I don't know how it came into his head to come out for it. Wan-Bissaka is there, and in the end does win the header. Onana is coming in so late. To me, that is actually worse than the one against Wolves on the first day, because at least that one, you could say the ball's travelling a long way. It's a little bit harder to judge. But this one, it was very, very clear from the second that left Casemiro's head that it wasn't going to get anywhere near. And it was just absolute panic. He panicked after Casemiro made a ridiculous decision, and he got punished for it, as he should have done on the first day against Wolves. They're bad mistakes, absolutely, but I'm not too concerned. I think he's been very good for 80% of the season. And yeah, you know, as a goalkeeper, you want him to be very good for every single game. But I think after the start that he had, I don't really have many complaints about how he's bounced back and how he has settled things down. And I think he has been a net positive for this United team. His shot stopping has been much better as we've gone through the season after a fairly shaky start. He's definitely better with De Gea with the ball at his feet. I still think there is more to come there. I think he would get a lot better in a better team that allows him to sort of show that part of his game much more clearly. But I think it's one of those things where you sort of have to take the rough with the smooth with a goalkeeper who is going to take a few risks with the ball at his feet like Onana.
Except in the Champions League, where I'll maintain he was but we can forget about that, Andre. And I like his mentality. What? And I think he'll be successful long term at United.
In the Champions League, I think actually the issues that I'm more concerned with in the Champions League were the awful shot stopping mistakes, like buying away, for example. The ones with his feet, there weren't that many in the Champions League, but they were bad. But it is on the goalkeeper at times, but it's also about the team around him. It's actually the shot stopping ones that to me were much more of a concern.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's have Guess the Player Clue 1, and then we'll talk a bit about Eric himself.
So Guess the Player Clue 1 is nice and short this week. It is simply, I have played for both Milan clubs.
Oh, okay. Well, Zlatan comes to mind immediately, but there are many others, so I won't be guessing yet. But thank you. Both Milan clubs. What have you made of Erik ten Hag's comments? Because I noticed at the Sheffield United game that when he came out, first of all, he was in a suit, which is the first, other than the FA Cup semi-final. Maybe he just wore it and thought it was really comfortable, so wore it again. But he then made what seemed like a more than usual concerted effort to applaud the fans, as if to say thanks for the backing. But this was before the game, but also after. And then you had his comments in the week, in the days leading up to that. He was fairly aggressive in his press conference previewing the Sheffield United game, and he kind of went on a more staunch defence of United's semi-final win than he did directly after the match. I quite like that. He's then gone fairly, you could call it aggressive or defensive, after the draw against Burnley as well, and called for patience and said United are one of the most entertaining teams in the league. What have you made of it all? It felt to me when I saw him walk out and make such concerted effort with the fans that maybe someone had got a word in his ear and given him a bit of advice, like get your suit on, look the part, and try and connect with the fans and go a bit more aggressive in the media. Or he's just decided he needs to shake something up a bit, or he's just acting out of frustration and under pressure. Well, we won't know the answer, but what do you think? It's relevant, or is it just media speculation?
To me, it seemed like he had sort of switched his focus away from the here and now in some ways, and more towards how do I sort of build a case for myself to stay in this job, but past the end of this season. I think his comments, especially after the Burnley game, defending the way this team plays, you know, saying how entertaining we are. I think to me it was, and even really going so hard in defending the FA Cup semi-final win as well, to me it just screamed of a manager who knows that he's under pressure and is really trying to cling on. And I think as part of that, he's trying to publicly sort of build a case for himself about the job that he's done at United and why he deserves to still be in that job. You know, he talked when he was defending the Coventry win about how great it is to be in three finals in his first 2 years, which, you know, fair enough. There aren't that many United managers that have done that. And obviously he's won one of them as well, which is better than, say, Solskjaer had managed. To me, that's what it has seemed like. Like you said, it could be someone, maybe he's gone to someone for advice and they've sort of said to him, look, as part of this, you need to try to connect with the fans a bit more, because that is going to play a big role in whether, you know, the new ownership structure is going to keep you on here, which I think is probably a fair point. I do think that fan sentiment, although not being right up there as a deciding factor, I think does play a role in, I think, shifting the conversation about a manager. To me, that's what it has seemed like throughout the week. And I think he realizes that he's probably not going to be able to change things between now and the end of the season. You know, the Champions League potential has been gone for the best part of a month now after this run of results that we've been on. I think he knows that, and he can't keep talking about that and what an achievement that would be. So the focus now goes on to, you know, what have we achieved? How can I come out publicly and build a case with the fans for why they should want me to stay?
Yeah. Yeah. And I quite like I don't mind if he wants to create a bit of a us against them mentality, which more his comments before the Sheffield United game rather than after the Burnley game, they sounded a bit more frustrated and desperate. But I quite like that. But the problem is you have to back it up on the pitch a bit, and you can't. From those two games, you then have to get 6 points at home, and United have failed to do so. And as you crucially said earlier, yeah, you can complain that we threw it away with one little mistake in a penalty, but ultimately our goal came from a Burnley mistake as well. It's fairly similar. Anything else key from the Burnley game or the Sheffield United game, which we haven't recorded since, before we move on?
Well, I think probably the biggest thing from the Burnley game was the reaction to Ten Hag subs. That is one of the loudest boos I've ever heard at Old Trafford in response to a manager making a decision during a game, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to a general frustration with his subs that I can't remember the specific examples from his first season, but I remember a couple of times grumblings, not of the same volume or breadth, but for similar reasons, and certainly plenty of times this season. And it's generally involved, especially at the start of the season, it was when Rasmus Højlund was being brought off, when he was still having his minutes managed. It's often involved Kobbie Mainoo as well, Garnacho, before he started playing every game and every minute. And I understand his reasoning that Højlund and Mainoo's minutes need to be managed, especially Højlund having played 120 minutes at Wembley and then again against Sheffield United, except for the kind of final 5 minutes or so. When you compare that to what was going on at the start of the season, it's clear his workload has increased massively. But you do look at the fact United are not playing again for another 9 days, I think between this game Saturday and next Monday against Crystal Palace. And you can understand why people are so frustrated. And yeah, It speaks to a lack of trust in Ten Hag's in-game management, which has developed throughout the season. And I think it is fair as well. We've not seen enough evidence. They've been occasional, but we've not seen enough evidence that he can change the game for the better.
Well, I think there was a lot of built-up frustration before the game anyway, the fact that Antony continued to start over Ahmad. I think that contributed to the boos when the first sort of big attacking change of the game was made. And yes, Ahmad did come on, but Antony stayed on the pitch. It would have been fairly easy to put Ethan Wheatley up front instead of Ahmad. It didn't make... When I saw the changes being made, I actually thought it would be McTominay that would be going and playing almost as a number nine. And Ahmad would maybe come at number 10. Bruno Fernandes would go back and play a little bit deeper in midfield. When McTominay went into his sort of more traditional defensive midfield role, and then Ahmad went up top, that to me was the moment where I was just like, I don't... The thinking here just doesn't seem to make any sense. It feels like you're sort of bringing all different parts of our team down a level by the changes that you're making when, all right, Ethan Wheatley, you know, only made his debut a few games before, but he seems a much better fit to play in that moment than Ahmad up front. And Ahmad was fine. And I think Ahmad should have started in the first place, given that he has done everything you could have asked for as a sub when he has been given a chance over the last couple of months. But I think that is where the frustration came from. Like you said, it's just an eroding of trust it's an eroding of trust that's gone on throughout the season, really. And I think this was just sort of the culmination of all of that frustration in a game that, you know, we were really struggling in at the time. Ten Hag can say all he wants after the game that we were dominant for large periods. That was not the game that I watched. And so in a game that where United were struggling a little bit, we were struggling to break down a team. You take off your main striker, bring on a winger, but leave a very underperforming winger on. I think it's just a combination of both the season's worth of frustration, but also in that game, fans not appreciating both the lineup that Ten Hag picked and the subs that he made in that moment.
And with good reason, fans were allowed to voice their opinion.
100%.
I always think, I would never be one to boo after a game, or particularly at halftime is the one I'm always baffled by. I never think our fans really imagine that's going to help the team. They can do what they like. They've paid for their ticket, but it would never be something I'd do. But I understand that reaction to a specific decision because, you need to make your... People may think they need to make their voice heard, and it's absolutely fair enough. We're going to talk more about Ten Hag and his future in the Patreon Q&A shortly. And then we'll talk more about Ethan Wheatley and the under-18s as well after that Patreon Q&A. Before all of that, guess the player. Clue two, please.
So clue two is, I made my senior professional debut in 2006, but I didn't join United until 9 years later.
Okay. 2006. So you joined United in 2015. All right. I'm going to have to carry on thinking because no one's coming to mind absolutely immediately. So I will think during the Patreon Q&A where we're going to talk about Ten Hag's future. What will United do with him? Well, let's see. Coming out of the Patreon Q&A, another really interesting... We could have this chat every week, and we almost have, but not all the time. Another really interesting conversation about Ten Hag's future and the pros and cons of keeping him and just how confusing it all is. One of the real highlights of the week, and we shouldn't just skip over this in any kind of blasé way because it's a massive landmark. Ethan Wheatley's debut made him the 250th graduate to represent Manchester United's first team from the club's world-famous academy. In the same week that the under-18s completed an impressive double and the under-21s played twice over the weekend to qualify for the Premier League 2 knockout stages, they beat Southampton 6-3 away from home on Monday lunchtime to secure what I think ended up being, and I'll just check this right now, an 11th placed finish in Premier League 2. The top 16 from the league qualify for a kind of playoff style tournament. It's very similar to the format that will be coming in the UEFA Champions League soon. Which is good news, mainly because it means more games for United's under-21s. That means more chance for players like Ethan Wheatley to get lots of game time and help with their development. The under-18s finished their league season, the regular season, against Everton at home on Saturday. They were beaten by Sunderland this weekend. They finished the regular season on this Saturday coming, and then they'll play likely Chelsea, but Chelsea not yet confirmed as champions of the Southern Division. They'll play Chelsea probably in a national final between the winners of the North and the South. Let's talk 250 first. What an amazing landmark number. And a really, It ended up being, and we've spoken about the negatives earlier, but it ended up making for a really nice midweek game where you had that added jeopardy of going behind, which obviously isn't ideal, but those midweek games against lesser opposition can be dull if it's just a kind of uninspiring 2-0 win. It's more exciting to come from behind. Bruno scores a fantastic goal and a penalty, and then you get the news travelling round that Everton are beating Liverpool and songs of Jurgen's cracking up, and then you get Ethan Wheatley coming on and hitting 250 and an amazing moment from a lad from Stockport, I think around the Hyde area, so kind of Stockport Manchester-y. But yeah, another local lad becoming a first teamer, becoming a graduate, and 250. It's
an incredible achievement. It really is something that the club should be so immensely proud of, to have this long of a track record of promoting youth players. It's a really, really special thing. We often talk about, you know, what makes football clubs special in a world where they're becoming so commercialized, and they feel it for the vast majority of the time, really, like they're being taken away from regular fans. And I think this is the thing at United that you can sort of hang your hat on and say, this is my football club. And it's such a special thing to have this record. I mean, how far does the record of consecutive academy players go back? It's to like the late 50s, isn't it?
Earlier October, 30th of October 1937, I think, away at Fulham.
Wow.
Tom Manley was playing, who was also the first graduate when he came through 6 years earlier. So, yeah, 92 years of youth development. The A-team was started in August 1932, Mujak in August 1938, and... yeah, almost 87 now years of consecutive games with a academy graduate in the first team match day squad. I think it's now 4,200 something games. Yeah, and what is special about them, and this is particularly relevant now under Ten Hag, is that it's all organic. He's not just handed this out, and that's been clear. Habib Agunya has been in the squad for weeks. Harriet Mass has been in the squad for weeks. Louis Jackson's now been in it a couple of times. Ethan Wheatley as well. This is not a manager who hands Davies out because he wants to hit a landmark. Those players have to work really hard to get into the squad. And then from there, they have to work a whole nother level of hard to actually get some minutes. He's not just going to hand them out at the end of a game. So the fact Ethan Wheatley's done that is impressive. And he's a talented player. He stood out really in the UEFA Youth League games. I think we mentioned him back in September, October. United's performances in the UEFA Youth League weren't fantastic. There was some bad luck, but they weren't fantastic really. And Ethan Wheatley looked good. Back then, he's developed a bit more muscle. There's so much development in that physical sense to go. But he's bulked out a little bit since autumn. He looks less kind of gangly, but he is still gangly. He's 6'3", I think. Holds the ball up very well. Finishes well off either foot. He can move very nicely. And yeah, real physicality. And that's shown in academy games. His mental development has been really interesting to watch. He's a player who can look really frustrated when he's playing poorly, and even then, once he gets a goal, can still look frustrated after he scores it, because he gets into his own head and it can affect his finishing. And that's the thing that's really developed this season, and he's become so much better at managing it and using it as a positive. And I imagine that development is one of the key reasons he was brought into first team training and then given a debut. And yeah, it was nice seeing Bruno Fernandes try to get him a goal as well, even if it didn't quite come off.
And, yeah.
It was such a great night for Bruno, where you see him score a couple like that, then you see those kind of gestures, and but yeah, Ethan Wheatley's an exciting player.
Yeah, and scored two goals this morning as well for the under 21s as they beat Southampton. I think the thing for me with the academy, just in general, is obviously you have the most famous academy graduates, like the class of 92, Marcus Rashford more recently, Garnacho at the moment, going back, players like George Best, Bobby Charlton. But I actually think the thing that at times hits home to me about just how huge the number of players, successful players that have come out of United's academy, is actually the players that have gone on to have very successful professional careers away from United. You know, in the last sort of 15 to 20 years, players like Ryan Shawcross, Robbie Brady, even Johnny Evans for a long time. Obviously, he's made a lot more appearances at United than that. Players like Josh King, Giuseppe Rossi. You know, there are so many players that have come through United's academy that, to be honest, haven't played a huge role at United itself. But it goes to show just how strong the academy is, that even players that aren't making it at United are going on to have, you know, very, very good careers elsewhere, like Michael Keane as well as another one, obviously Burnley and then Everton. There are just so many players.
Oliver Norwood on Wednesday for Sheffield United has become a fan favourite at Sheffield United over years of kind of dedication there. Yeah, is another one. And yeah, they're littered around European football. It is great. But I like this 250 landmark because there kind of needs to be. We've had the 4,000 games landmark in 2019, which was fantastic for that. Then you've got 250 is really a chance to celebrate those who did make it. It feels like the next one, someone needs to work out, and I'll try my best, is something to celebrate the ones you're pointing out who have gone elsewhere. And to be fair, it's something that is being celebrated more and more at the academy. It's always been celebrated in an informal way. If, for like, sometimes I'll be at Carrington on a Monday morning and people will be buzzing because someone's done something away from the club, and that genuinely that happens, and academy staff always keep up to date with it. But the launch of the alumni scheme recently will make that a more formal process. And I was at Carrington the other day. Tom Thorpe was there just having a chat with a few people. He's recovering from injury. And I was there in October when Callum Gribben was back in the building. Devontae Redmond was back at Old Trafford recently. Even Ashley Fletcher was back at Old Trafford for the alumni launch event, which was for the under-21s game against Liverpool. So it's becoming more formal, that thing. And yeah, I think we'll see those players that you're bringing up, like Michael Keane and the rest, and be celebrated more and more regularly because it, yeah. And you're absolutely right. Your point is central to all this and goes back to the point we spoke about around Old Trafford, and my real kind of key worry, but also hope for United, is that identity is becoming harder and harder to make unique in football, and people seem to be kind of running away from it in favour of the kind of standardisation of the game at the elite level. And this is where United can separate and celebrate it really well, and they do that, and it's great. But yeah, it should be about embracing this, and I hope Ineos realise that. Okay, let's have Guess the Player Clue 3.
Okay, so Guess the Player Clue 3. I'm assuming you're not guessing.
I have a guess and I think it's right, but I'll keep it and tell you after you give Clue 3.
Okay, so Clue 3 is, despite being a defender, I wore number 36 at United and played all across the back line during my time at the club.
Yeah, that confirms my guess, which is Matteo Darmian.
Spot on, exactly. Started his career at AC Milan, only made a handful of appearances, and is at Inter Milan currently.
Yeah, I actually didn't know he'd played at AC Milan, or I'd forgotten that information. But when you said joined in 2015 and had played for Inter, I thought that there's only one I can really think of there. So
yeah,
I had to go for him
because I knew that both Milan clubs would lead you down the Zlatan path. But yeah, starting his career in 2006 was too late for Zlatan.
Yeah, exactly. Now you need to head off. I'll speak a little bit more about the academy and then we'll wrap up. But for more throughout the week from you, people can find you on Twitter
at UTD Tate, TAIT.
Okay, see you in a bit, and I'll carry on rambling.
Cheers.
Okay, Jack, diving off a little bit more on the academy, and one of the great things was Ethan Wheatley going back to school on Thursday morning, and I heard recently that Kobbie Mainoo's still got some school qualifications he needs to do, and yeah, if he goes to the Euros, it might be quite a hard one to do. But it is a great thing to be proud of. And it was one of the most amazing weeks for the academy and the players and the staff, because not only did you have 250, but the day before, the under-18s beat Manchester City 2-1 at Lee Sports Village, a sellout crowd at Lee Sports Village because of mad traffic and an accident on the motorways. It wasn't completely full, even though all the tickets had been ordered. But I think a crowd of about 7,000 and watched Wheatley score two in the first half. The first one, just a fantastic, inventive, tight angle volley after good ball over the top from James Nolan. Nolan got the assist for the second as well as Wheatley scored. And then the first half performance was exemplary from United. More backs against the wall approach in the second half, and City got one back pretty late on, from memory, about the 85th minute. But United managed to hold on. Eli Harrison had an incredibly good game. His distribution was fantastic. He played a part in both of the first two goals, and then made a couple of crucial saves in the second half. So he did really well. He was actually really good again on Friday, as the under-18s drew 0-0 away at Nottingham, as the under-21s, sorry, drew 0-0 away at Nottingham Forest. So he's developing really well. And yeah, it's a fantastic double for the under-18s to win the under-18 Premier League North and then the under-18 Premier League Cup, beating City to both of them. The players were buzzing. It was a pleasure to be there because of a project I'm working on. I got to be on the pitch at full time, and just the buzz. And I talk a lot to some of you will have heard Nick Cox on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he talks a lot in conversation about the development opportunities, and Adam Lawrence, the coach, will speak about the same, the development opportunities of playing in front of a crowd, playing with pressure and playing against a great team like City. But in that moment, and I said this to him at the time, it's, you see that now and you think, this isn't about development, this is about just incredible lifelong memories and lads making lifelong mates in these moments. And yeah, it was really special. I was on a massive buzz. And yeah, the academy again, similar to 2 years ago when in the FA Youth Cup winning season, when Alan Garnacho was making his debut, the academy again in a drab season, although this year we've got the actual FA Cup final, which is a key difference. It's not fizzling out entirely. Yeah, the academy proving the pride of United. I think Jack's point about that being a core identity, and hoping that Ineos can follow that and stick with it and make it the centre, the heartbeat of the club, as it has been for so many decades, is absolutely crucial. No game for United at the weekend until Monday night, when it's Crystal Palace. Insane scheduling of a game on a bank holiday, 8 p.m. on a Monday, for absolutely no reason other than to more money from TV rights. Credit to United for putting on free coaches for supporters. I'll be there if anyone wants a pint at Selhurst Park. And we haven't had great memories at Selhurst Park as of recently. We always seem to be playing at night or in towards the end of the season at Selhurst Park when there's not much to play for. I remember, I think the final game of Rannick's season was away at Crystal Palace, and Erik ten Hag turned up in his linen suit, which was exciting. I don't think he'd actually been officially announced as United manager at that point, so there was some kind of hiding going on as he arrived, but that was excitement over the future. There's not enough at the moment, but let's see what we can do. As for the rest of the team, United women won 1-0 away at Leicester City on Sunday, but that result does very little in the league table. United are too far behind Arsenal, third in the league, United 9 points off them, so are just trying to finish fourth at the moment. They've got Liverpool close behind. Goal difference is much better. Liverpool are 3 points behind with a game in hand. And also coming up, yeah, the under-18s host Everton on Saturday morning in their final game of the regular season before probably playing Chelsea, the champions of the Southern Division, in a national final. That game, if it's against Chelsea, you'd hope will be at Stamford Bridge in mid-May. So there's more excitement to come for the academy, and hopefully some better performances from the first team as well. Thank you very much for listening. More from me throughout the week. Find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. And if you enjoying the show, please leave us a review on whatever app you use, or become a patron, and you can find information about how to do that on our Twitter. Otherwise, have a fantastic week, and thank you very much for listening. Goodbye. Network.